This is West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. Since the Kalamazoo Promise was announced 8 years ago, communities across the country have been trying to develop their own programs to provide college scholarships. Next week, the fifth PromiseNet is being held in Kalamazoo. Michelle Miller Adams has done extensive research on the Promise and other scholarship programs. She is a research fellow at the Upjohn Institute for Employment Research in Kalamazoo, as well as a member of the political science faculty at Grand Valley State University. Michelle, thank you for being here.
Thank you, Gordon. I'm always glad to be at MUK.
Let's explain, first of all, what is PromiseNet?
PromiseNet is kind of a non-traditional conference. This will be the fifth meeting of PromiseNet, and we think of it as much more of a networking and mutual learning opportunity than the kind of conference where, as one of our planners calls it, you sit and you get. It's much more communities coming together and learning from each other. The little tagline for our conference this year is PromiseNet, let's talk. People also wonder who organizes this, and that's kind of a funny thing about it. It is not really organized by any individual group. It is more of a planning committee that comes together on a very ad hoc basis from multiple communities, and we work over the course of about 6 months to a year to come up with a program. We plan it all virtually through these phone calls. And so it's not really sponsored by anybody. It is hosted usually by the community where it's located. So this will be the third time that it takes place in Kalamazoo.
Are the people who come to this conference coming from school districts which already have scholarship programs? Are they coming from school districts that are thinking of creating scholarship programs, a combination thereof?
A combination. We have, to date, about 40 communities represented. Oh, I would say about half of them already have programs. The other half are either into the planning stages or considering it. And it's very broad representation. I took a look at the list this morning. I believe there are 13 states represented and the province of Ontario. So wide representation from really all parts of the country, Texas, California, the East Coast, the South, and lots of folks from Michigan.
As someone who has followed this closely, does it surprise you that there are not more communities which have tried it, or does this number seem about right, or maybe even seem like it's a little high for what you might have expected, say, 8 years ago when it all started?
Oh, I think 8 years ago when it started, nobody really expected any other community to do this. And I've been told by people who know the donors that they were, I would say, of all the surprises of the past 8 years, that has probably been the greatest surprise, is how many communities have looked at this model and this approach and said, wow, this makes sense for our community. Let's try to emulate it and replicate that here. I don't think that was expected at all. So I would say it's a high number in that respect. I do think not everybody knows about this. And if more communities knew about it, there would be many, many more, because it is a very intuitively appealing model. And we see communities grabbing onto it when they learn about it. But, you know, the Kalamazoo Promise doesn't really do any marketing. So it's kind of random, and this sort of odd network effect, the way other communities find out about the Promise model.
And oftentimes they find out through, say, national media coverage, the New York Times Magazine story last year, for instance.
Absolutely. I mean, that was very important. There have been these moments along the way when the Kalamazoo Promise has garnered national attention. So that article was one of those moments. The president speaking at Kalamazoo Central's graduation a few years ago was another moment. And the beginning of the promise was a third moment. But in between, it's sort of like, oh, someone from a community might know someone from Kalamazoo who might tell them about the Kalamazoo Promise, and then they'll look into it and kind of diffuses like that. You see this little pocket of Promise programs in Arkansas. I think there are about four or five of them now. And that was this effect of some people from El Dorado, Arkansas, who found out about Kalamazoo and replicated the program. And then other communities in Arkansas saw that. And so they replicated their own version of the program, kind of spreads like that.
So 8 years into this grand experiment, if we can call it that, of the Kalamazoo Promise, what has it done for Kalamazoo? Let's break this down. Let's talk about economically. What can we say that the promise has done for the economy of Kalamazoo?
You're asking me the hardest question first.
Okay.
Okay. So I'm going to look at this a little bit differently. I've been thinking about this question a lot, at a high level. I think you need to think about the effects of the Kalamazoo Promise in terms of different generations of effects. The first generation of effects, which materialized quite rapidly, is obviously the effect on the families receiving and using the scholarship in terms of how that may change where they go on to higher ed, how much higher ed they attempt, and also a very direct and immediate effect on the Kalamazoo Public Schools district. You've seen this really strong enrollment growth in the district, which has been also important for economic development, has some economic development implications as well. But, you know, we are really the only urban school district in Michigan and one of the few in the country that has had double-digit growth over the past 8 years. The district has grown about 24% since the promise was announced. So that has been really positive for Kalamazoo Public Schools in terms of funding. It also, one of the most immediate effects of the promise is basically everybody at Kalamazoo Public Schools working harder to make sure that students are prepared to take advantage of the promise, innovating around college readiness, this huge increase in advanced placement courses, the introduction of a college-going culture, even at the very elementary school levels at very, very early years, to really grow a generation of kids are going to be able to take advantage of that. So that was kind of the first generation, the first few years. It's only been in the last couple of years that we've seen some of what I would call these second generation effects, which are showing up in graduation rates, in the percentage of students who are progressing through post-secondary programs and completing. There needed to be some time for those effects to really show up because, for example, the class of 2006 was the first class to get the promise. College completion rates for four-year programs are usually counted over a six-year increment. So it wasn't until 2012 that you could really even judge how well that first class of Kalamazoo Promise scholars had done in progressing through and completing degrees. And they've done quite well. Compared to the national average, those numbers look very good for every racial group. It's kind of one of those glass half full, glass half empty stories. For African American and Hispanic students, the rates are lower than for white students, but they are actually better than the national averages for those groups. That's impressive because we're a high poverty district and you would expect us to lag the national rate rather than outperform it.
And that class of 2006 had already gone through 11 years of schooling, some of them planning to go to college and some of them probably thinking that it wasn't going to ever happen. So would we expect to see maybe some different outcomes down the road for students who were in elementary school when the promise was announced, students who had not yet begun school when the promise was announced, the whole history, the arc of their education may be quite different from that class of 2006, correct?
Absolutely. That's absolutely true. The students who were already into high school when the Kalamazoo Promise was announced, their trajectories were pretty well set. It did open up some choices for them. But as you move back and back along the age range, the younger the student, the more degrees of freedom they have to make choices that are going to enable them to take advantage of the promise. So, and in fact, that's why I think we didn't see any impact on the graduation rates for a number of years. If you were already academically failing and on the precipice of dropping out, the fact that you could go to college for free may have been largely irrelevant if you were in, 9th, 10th, 11th, 12th grade. For students who were in elementary school or 6th middle school when the Kalamazoo Promise was announced, there's still time to adjust course and make decisions. One of the best pieces of research that we have to date, and I can talk a little bit later about what we do and don't know, my colleagues at the Institute, Tim Bartik and Marta Lachowska, did a study on the short-term academic achievement impact of the promise. And it's quite a rigorous study. It's posted on our website at the Upjohn Institute. And it showed that there was an immediate impact on students who were eligible for the promise in terms of a reduction in the number of days they were suspended from school and an increase, particularly for African-American students, in their GPA. Those were very early effects. And we only expect to see those effects intensify as subsequent classes of students come along.
And in that case, the control here in the study was that there were already students who were in high school, but they had started after ninth grade. So therefore, they were not eligible for the promise. So there were a couple of different reactions when people woke up on that November morning 8 years ago to find out about the promise, depending on when you had started school in KPS.
Exactly. And this allowed Tim and Marta to basically replicate kind of a gold standard, not really randomized, but a very good comparison group. They used a difference-in-difference methodology. And this is, you know, one of the more rigorous pieces of research. One of the problems, of course, with the Kalamazoo Promise is we don't have a good control group. So we can't run randomized control trials of the effects of the promise. So my economist colleagues get pretty creative in how they do this. But I think we're going to see those effects intensify. And that's why I think of some of these achievement-related effects as sort of a second generation, because there's been time now, not a lot of time, but time for students to adjust their trajectories. The third generation of effects are what you initially asked me about, which really have to do with economic development impacts. This is a very long-term program. It was set up as such. It's set up to continue in perpetuity. The donors clearly see it as a decades-long, multi-generational investment and experiment. So in that sense, it's really quite early. Clearly, there have been some economic development benefits from the Kalamazoo Promise coming from enrollment growth. Some of that enrollment growth has come from people moving to the area from out of area. I've spoken with some realtors recently who tell me that the Kalamazoo Promise is a powerful recruitment tool for the major employers here who seek to draw talent from a national pool. And it's not just that some of them choose to come because they have children who will benefit from the Kalamazoo Promise. They come because this is the kind of community they want to be a part of. And they may come and move to Portage or move to Mattawan and go to work for Stryker or go to work for the hospital. But the Kalamazoo Promise has helped these companies recruit and attract them to the community. The problem with all of this is that it is very, very hard to measure the economic development effects. One of the reasons is that they're so long-term. But the other reason is that as you move away from the students and schools, you get many, many factors that are affecting things like population growth, the job market, business formation, the housing market, downtown development. So those things might look good, but we don't really know if they look good because of the promise. And it's almost impossible to tell. So that's a real challenge. We're working, some of my really creative colleagues at the Upjohn Institute, many of whom you know, George Arachek, Tim Bartik, we're thinking a lot about how to measure the community level, the non-academic impacts. I've done a couple of little things myself. Just recently, I did, this past year, I did a kind of a content analysis study of how the Kalamazoo Gazette had covered the Kalamazoo Public Schools pre- and post-promise. And then I looked at how the Grand Rapids Press had covered the Grand Rapids Public Schools pre- and post-promise as a kind of comparison. And we did this, you know, counting the number of articles that were substantive about the districts and coding them with multiple coders as positive, negative, neutral. And it wasn't a surprise, but the magnitude was quite strong. We saw a real shift in coverage in Kalamazoo, not in Grand Rapids, and the shift was in the direction of more coverage and much more positive coverage. And so that has to do with perceptions, but the perception of the school district as an improving district, a strengthening district, a higher performing district, sets kind of a virtuous circle in motion and can contribute to the reality of that improving district. And there's a lot of literature that suggests that the economic dynamism of a city and of a region is impaired if it has a low-performing school district at its center. So that's very helpful. But again, not it's really hard to sort of say input Kalamazoo Promise, output X many new jobs or X many new residents. We don't stop people on their way into the community and say, why did you come? Did it have to do with the Kalamazoo Promise? We know it did for many people, but we don't know how many.
I want to go to this quote, though, of you in the New York Times Magazine article on the promise. Other communities invest in things like arenas or offer tax incentives for businesses or revitalize their waterfronts. You go on to say the Kalamazoo Promise tries to develop the local economy with a long-term investment in human capital that is intended to change the town from the bottom up. We're talking, of course, a lot about the Kalamazoo Promise in terms of education. Might it also change the way we think about how towns try to develop economically?
Yeah, that's a great question, because I think, and I've been studying this question in connection with another project that actually has to do with philanthropy in Kalamazoo, but I think the Kalamazoo Promise, I do see it very much as an investment made by wealthy individuals who feel committed to this city, and they expect a return on their capital, on their investment. They're smart business people. That's why they have so much money, in part. So, but that return is calculated differently than, oh, the number of conventions you'll attract if you build a convention center. It's a longer term investment, but it is it's an investment in human capital. I think that decision to invest in human capital is both a reflection of trends that have been long underway in our community. This has been a community that for years has had people investing in education, investing in the schools, investing in the quality of life, rather than investing in building infrastructure, which our neighbor to the north has done a really excellent job of. So I think it's in line with that. And then, of course, it does also contribute to what happens in the future. If you think about the plans to develop a medical school at Western as sort of the next big, in this case also anonymous, philanthropic donation to our community, it's again not really about the buildings. It's about the school, the educational opportunities, growing our own medical sector. So I think it is in line with a long history of this community, this tradition of anonymous philanthropy, of investing in people, of investing in education, of making this a more appealing place to live. Ron Kitchen has always called it a stickier place, a place that's harder to leave. And then I think it also will have implications down the road for how we position our community to make it more attractive.
Do more promise-type programs developing around the country offer an opportunity for you and other researchers to get a better gauge on what works, what doesn't work, and the impact that they're having?
Yeah, that's also another really great question. It's really challenging. I worked with the Lumina Foundation over the past few months to put together a convening of Promise researchers, which took place in Indianapolis just 2 weeks ago. And we had about 16 people from around the country who all have done research on Promise programs. And we were trying to both assess what we know and lay out an agenda for what we would like to learn about the impact of place-based scholarship programs. One of the challenges is nobody has any money for research. When donors endow a scholarship program, they're mainly endowing the scholarship, sometimes support services. Nobody really adds that extra kicker in for research and or marketing. But there are a lot of people who are so fascinated by this, they're working on it anyway. The bigger problem is that all of the programs look a little different from each other. So we have, there are many ways you can sort them, but one of the big ways is that about half of the programs, and there are about 30 now that have been created, modeled on the Kalamazoo Promise in part, about half of those are universal in that every student in the school district is eligible for the scholarship to go to whatever school they can get into, provided some minimum enrollment and residency requirements are met. That has generally been the case for these programs. The other half have some merit-based requirement, so they are only students are only eligible if they have a 2.5 GPA, 90% attendance requirement. I think those are the guidelines in the Pittsburgh Promise. There's a Promise program in New Haven, which is even more merit-based. You need to have a 3.0 GPA to receive that scholarship. Very few of the programs have a need component. There are a couple that are designed for lower income or first generation college goers. But we've mainly seen these programs divide into the universal versus merit based model. And there are also a lot of differences in the size of the benefit, how much scholarship money is allowed, and where you're allowed to use that money.
And there are some restrictions in Kalamazoo. It's
absolutely
got to be a state university in Michigan or community college.
In-state public institution. Some programs have allowed you to take your scholarship anywhere in the state with a maximum tuition. Others have restricted it to local institutions. All of these things make it very, very difficult to compare. But we are starting to organize ourselves into a, I think it's fair to say, a consortium of promise researchers. We've decided we can call ourselves that. And again, it's all very ground up. There's no one in charge. It's more of a collaborative grassroots effort to organize what we know and what we would like to know, kind of like PromiseNet, which is, again, a bottom-up communities organizing themselves to move their knowledge forward.
You have said that the research shows that a universal model is preferable in terms of creating a scholarship. In other words, allowing everybody who meets the residency requirement and graduates and gets accepted to take advantage of the scholarship money.
I don't think, or at least I shouldn't have said that the research shows that. I personally believe that if what you're trying to do is transform a community, then a universal program works better. When we do some consulting to communities around promise programs, and the first thing they want to know is what it's going to cost. But we always say we can't tell you that yet, because first we want to know what you want to accomplish. What is the critical need in this community? And depending on your critical need, your program may look different. And then we're going to be able to figure out what it costs. If a community is using a promise program as a carrot to encourage students to do better in school, arguably, you could impose a minimum GPA, as they have done in Pittsburgh or in New Haven, if that is the critical need. The problem that I have is that for most communities claim to want to maximize usage of this program and transform their community through a promise program. And for that, I think a universal program is much better suited. And I also believe that there is accountability built into those universal programs, and there is still that incentive to do better in school. If you do well enough in school in Kalamazoo Public Schools to get into the University of Michigan, your scholarship's going to be worth upwards of $10,000 a year for you. If you don't do that well in school, but you use your promise to go to our local wonderful community college, your scholarship's worth a couple thousand dollars a year. So if you believe that the size of the scholarship provides some kind of incentive for higher academic effort and attainment, that accountability is still there. But for me, what's so valuable about the universal model, and other communities have certainly seen this, is that it really is for everyone. And so people outside the school district feel connected to the Kalamazoo Promise. It's not about smart kids or poor kids or any subset of kids. It's really about the community. It's about Kalamazoo. It's about Kalamazoo Public Schools. And that creates this buy-in around it that adds to the momentum. There is a literature, there is research that shows that universal social programs have a much higher level of public support and buy-in than targeted programs do. And you only need to look as far as Social Security to see the difference between something like Social Security and, say, Medicaid, where Social Security is for everyone. It affects different people in different ways. It's more valuable to some people than others, but everybody gets it. Everybody supports it. It's the third rail of politics. You don't want to touch it and say you want it to go away. Targeted programs like welfare, TANF, Medicaid, they're much easier to cut because they affect far fewer people, and those people are not all that empowered. So there is a strong literature around that, and I think a lot of it does apply to the universal model of promise programs as well.
To play devil's advocate, something like the Pittsburgh program where you put a 2.5 GPA and an attendance requirement of, say, 90%, couldn't you argue that getting students in that frame of mind, that you have to at least do that, puts them in a better spot to succeed in college, and therefore creates perhaps the college-going culture, which we talk about so often in Kalamazoo?
Right, absolutely. And I think that's one of the strongest arguments, and Pittsburgh is very effective of making this argument. We don't want to send kids off to college prepared to fail. We want them to be prepared to succeed. And Pittsburgh, to its credit, actually has a not well-known section of its program that if you are between a 2.0 and a 2.5 GPA, the Pittsburgh Promise will cover your tuition at a community college. And if you do well there, you can then matriculate to a four-year program and receive the full remainder of the full fellowship, so the full scholarship. I think that's an important argument. But the reality, in terms of creating a college-going culture, the reality is that only about half of the students sitting in Pittsburgh Public Schools high schools right now are eligible for the Promise. And the other half, no, they're not. I haven't studied the culture of Pittsburgh Public Schools, but I have to imagine that there's some bifurcation in terms of, are you going to be a Promise recipient or not? The other thing I want to say is that there are many non-traditional programs, and we always have to say this because we talk about college, but the Kalamazoo Promise can be used at any credit-bearing program at any community college in Michigan, many of which are very short-term certificate or trade programs. Actually, even I think less well-known is the fact that there is now an apprenticeship program that Kalamazoo Public Schools developed with the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers, full-on trade program that can be covered, the costs of which are covered by the Kalamazoo Promise. So for students who are not traditionally successful in academic terms, I actually feel like the Kalamazoo Promise is even more important for those students who were not even going to attempt any kind of post-secondary certificate or program and now can go to KVCC, can train in their auto mechanic institute, can train in their home healthcare institute. Those certificates, the emergency welder certificate, those certificates make a huge difference in terms of the earning potential of these folks. And I think, you know, the message the donors sent, whether they intended to or not, is just because you're not a traditionally successful student does not mean that some kind of post-secondary training or certificate is not for you. It really is for everyone, and that can make a huge difference for that population.
So Kalamazoo was the first one out of the gate. There were a few scholarship programs before that, but Kalamazoo kind of got this wave started, which includes PromiseNet coming up next week. And of course, now when someone does a story about scholarship programs, such as the New York Times Magazine or anybody else, the first place they'll probably look is Kalamazoo. I guess what I wonder, though, is there another community which perhaps may already be starting their scholarship program, perhaps they're going to learn something at PromiseNet, which might build a better scholarship program, might improve on it in such a way that they get to watch everybody else's successes, everybody else's mistakes, and perhaps produce a program that we look back on here from Kalamazoo and say, gee, maybe that's what we should have done, or at least that's what we should have had the donors do.
Right. Yeah, I certainly think that's possible. And as you look at the diversity of models, I'll give you an example. In some communities, there is a local private institution, kind of like Kalamazoo College here, that is a very important community player, very involved in the schools. Some communities have worked with those institutions to include them among eligible Promise institutions. And the private school has generally reduced its tuition or guaranteed a certain number of slots for students admitted at the maximum in-state public tuition. I think there's some people here who maybe wish that that had been part of the Kalamazoo Promise. Now, of course, Kalamazoo College also has a Heil Scholarship Program, which is for Kalamazoo Public Schools students, but in the math and sciences. So, you know, a really talented student who's not in the math and sciences coming out of KPS doesn't really have an institutionalized path to Kalamazoo College, although K College certainly recruits and funds many of the students. So that's an example of a tweak that could have been made. But the great thing is it still could be made. The donors are living. They're following this. I don't know who they are, but I know they're paying attention. And so they have made changes along the way. One of the most important changes, it's an ongoing change, is that there's an appeals process for the Kalamazoo Promise in terms of determining the length of residency in the district and eligibility. And so every year there's a handful of cases that go to this appeals board. And generally the donors have opted to, particularly for cases where a student has left the district for a short while, sometimes related to custody issues or parents who have had job dislocation, they've erred on the side of giving more generous credit for those students. So there's decision-making processes in place, and if the donors wanted to expand the eligibility of the Promise or re-engineer it in some way, I think they still could do that. I think they would be very cautious about making it more restrictive because it's obviously important that people know far out into the future that the Promise is going to be here. we're asking families with young children, maybe families who don't have children yet, to come to this community on the premise that the Kalamazoo Promise will be available for them, for their children 18, 20, 25 years down the road. And I'm confident it will be. The donors have repeatedly stressed that it will be. So it's important not to make changes, you know, randomly, but I do think there is possible evolution down the road as the donors look around and maybe see things they like in other communities.
Anything else you'd like to add?
I think PromiseNet's going to be a great conference. I hope there'll be some information coming out about it. I hope some of our listeners in other communities will think about coming here. There is a lot of activity in Michigan. So I guess I do just want to add that a lot of the communities that are developing Promise programs are here. I think Michigan gets a bad rap sometimes. The focus is on sometimes some of our less successful stories and places. There is a lot of innovation around Promise programs, around college access, around workforce creation. There's a really interesting new program in Detroit, a place-based scholarship program. So I'm hoping there'll be some national attention on the innovation that comes out of Michigan, not necessarily out of our largest communities. And PromiseNet's an opportunity for that.
Michelle Miller-Adams, thank you for your time, as always.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Michelle Miller-Adams is a research fellow at the Upjohn Institute for Employment Research in Kalamazoo. She's also a member of the political science faculty at Grand Valley State University. This is West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans.